Hello and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, monsters, heroes, and other mythological beings that we find in it, and how to use them and religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the Egyptian mythos section of Deities and Demigods. And I should say that today's episode may be a short one. The reason for that is that we've got two deities before we get to Set, and I think that Set and his henchmen, who also have their own entry, is going to be a sufficiently complicated topic that it's probably worth an episode of its own. And so today, we're going to talk about two deities, or depending on what time period you're talking about, one deity. We're going to talk about Ta, and we're going to talk about Seker, or Sokar, or Shokar. I mean, my pronunciation in languages that I don't speak is not fantastic to begin with, and then add in the fact that there isn't one definitive pronunciation for a lot of these Egyptian names, and furthermore, if there were, we wouldn't necessarily know what it was. But let's start off with Ta. So Ta is quite an interesting deity. In this entry, he's described as a creator god, the god who formed the prime material plane. And that is correct. He's also said to have created humanity, although we've also seen some other creation myths. I was reading a thing, I think this was in the introduction to the translation of the Book of the Dead that I've been using. But they said, and I think that this really sums it up well, that Egyptian religion is always changing, always developing and growing and adding new things, but it never really gets rid of old things. So even if the cult of, you know, Ta as primarily a creator god from the Old Kingdom period kind of is displaced by the belief in Ta as an underworld god in the New Kingdom period, that doesn't mean that the belief in Ta as a creator god goes away. It just kind of coexists with all these other beliefs. And what that means is that Egyptian religion might include multiple apparently contradictory beliefs, which would be a problem if anyone was trying to articulate a single all-inclusive statement of what people who worshipped Ra and Osiris and whatever believed. But that wasn't happening. This is more common around the world and throughout history than we tend to think. Religions that have, you know, very clear senses of what they do and don't believe, often in the real world not as clear as we'd like to think, but, you know, in general, there is a focus on establishing a canon within faiths like Christianity, even if different Christian sects disagree about what that canon is. For the most part, not all, but for the most part, they agree that there is a right way to understand the Bible and there is a correct set of beliefs against which other beliefs are incorrect. That doesn't seem to have bothered most, say, ancient Greek writers, who will just quite curiously observe that one place has a particular myth about a god, and that another place has a different and obviously contradictory myth about that god, and just kind of say, yeah, you know. What's important to them is that this is the origin of a particular festival or something like that. And this should, of course, be good news to gamers. I can just come up with a collection of myths rather than have to have a single coherent doctrinal statement. Fantastic. Anyway, I'm sorry, that was a real tangent. My point is that Ta, as a creator deity, which is kind of how the book mainly sees him, is absolutely consistent with some of the things that we know about how Ta was venerated, particularly early on in his history, in the Old Kingdom period, but right through, all the way through the New Kingdom. Ta was, because of his role as a creator, Ta was seen as a patron of people who made things and built things. So the priesthood of Ta, for example, were involved in the construction of the pyramids. But also Ta later becomes a patron of kind of crafts and manufacturing. So if you're a carpenter or something, or a potter or an artist, then Ta might be kind of a deity that would be relevant to your work because your act of creation is a little bit like Ta's act of creation. So the creator deity role of Ta is tied into the idea of physical creation. I like that the Deities and Demigods book describes Ta as a dwarf. Now, obviously there they mean a dwarf in the sense of like, you know, a dwarf in Dungeons and Dragons, a, you know, stout, bearded, underground dweller who loves handicrafts. But it is true that in the early history of kind of depictions of Ta, he is often depicted as a dwarf. So, by which, you know, I mean a short person. Or maybe a fantastic creature. I mean, but that just ties in so neatly with the idea in D&D, which of course comes from Norse mythology, that dwarves are particularly connected to, like, making things, to handicrafts. So there's a nice little synchronicity there. Later on, we'll see that Ta is typically depicted as, well, I mean, often depicted as being identical to other deities, like literally identical. And we have so far in this series primarily encountered Ta in one of these syncretized forms, right? So we've talked before about the ways in which different deities are fused together to create dual or triple gods. So an example would be Re Harakhti, who is a fusion of Ra and Horus. And probably the most famous form of this for Ta would be Ta-Sokar or Ta-Sokar Osiris. Although, boy, there's more to it than that, but we'll talk about it in a second, because that second person of that group, Sokar, is our next deity after Ta. So in Deities and Demigods, Ta is described as lawful neutral. I'm not 100% sure about that. I'll grant you lawful, right? Ta's creation of an orderly physical world out of a chaotic natural one, like, sure, absolutely, that's an act of lawfulness. But I would say that in the way that Ta is described in the texts that relate to him, in prayers or other religious writings that are addressed to him, I would say that he is typically thought of as being good. Ta is seen as a deity that answers prayers. The image of ears is often associated with Ta, because Ta is a god who listens to mortals when they pray. The face of Ta, which is referred to a lot in the Book of the Dead, is seen as a symbol of, like, benevolence and kindness. So I think that overall Ta is seen quite positively, that that he's probably a good god, specifically one who kind of helps people in need. So that line about never getting rid of anything was in reference to the Book of the Dead. So the Book of the Dead is a compilation of individual spells or kind of ritual formulae. And those include ones that are rooted in very early funerary texts, the so-called pyramid texts or coffin texts, and then other ones that are added in a much later period when we get, the Book of the Dead in the form that we understand it. So again, this is a compilation that is constantly being added to, and probably things are getting, like, removed, but no one ever goes back and revises the old spells to make sure that they're, like, doctrinally consistent with the new ones. Sometimes they get changed and sometimes they don't. So Ta, in the Book of the Dead, is seen mainly as another deity who kind of intercedes on the behalf of the deceased in their journey through the afterlife. And like all other deities in the Book of the Dead, often the dead person is identified with Ta. So you can become Ta, most famously in spell 82, which is one of the oft-quoted spells from the Book of the Dead. The spell for becoming Ta, eating bread, drinking beer, purifying the hinder parts, and being alive in Heliopolis. And although Ta is mentioned here, as you will see, his role in the spell is pretty minor. So these aren't, like, when you hear the spell, you will not think that Ta is the most notable part of it. I have flown up as a falcon. I have cackled as a goose. I have alighted on yonder road of the mound of the great festival. What I doubly detest, I will not eat. What I detest is feces, and I will not eat it. What I detest is excrement, and it shall not enter my body. What will you live on? Say the gods and spirits to me. I will live and have power through bread. Where will you eat it? Say the gods and spirits to me. I will have power, and I will eat it under the branches of the tree of Hathor, my mistress, who made offering of bread, beer, and corn in Heliopolis. I will don a loincloth from the hand of Tyt. I will dwell in the place where I wish to be. My head is that of Re, who is united with Atum, the four sons of the length of the land. I have gone forth, for my tongue is that of Ta. My throat is that of Hathor, for I have recalled with my mouth the speech of Atum to my father when he destroyed the majesty of the wife of Geb, whose head was broken at his word. Be afraid thereat, and report it, the outcry at my strength. There shall be assigned to me the heritage of the Lord of the Earth, namely Geb, and I shall be cared for thereby. Geb shall refresh me, for he has given to me his appearings in glory. Those who are in Heliopolis bow their heads to me, for I am their lord. I am their bull. I am mightier than the Lord of Terror. I copulate, and I have power over myriads. Now, this is obviously very relatable. I mean, I think I, too, do not wish to eat poop, which I detest, but is not obviously specifically about Ta, but this invocation of Ta as another example of the divine power that imbues and protects the deceased, I think it's pretty typical of how Ta appears in the Book of the Dead. Not being an expert on it, that's my, you know, purely casual reading in English translation response. Next up, let's talk about Sekar or Sokar. I think this is with a sh sound rather than an S. I do not know, but I believe that's correct. Especially in the later period, he's usually seen in this form as Ta Sekar or Ta Sokar, or indeed unified as Ta Sokar Osiris. In Deities and Demigods, he is described as an evil battling god of light, and I'm not sure that that's exactly right. Although, if you look at the entry where it talks about the symbol, how he's a mummiform deity, sometimes with a hawk's head, that is very much what his iconography looks like. And, as it mentions, he does protect people on their journey through the underworld. Like Ta, he has a cult center at Memphis. Like Ta, he is associated with crafts. You know, Sekar in actual Egyptian mythology represents one of the biggest challenges of adapting any real-world religion or real-world mythology to gaming, which is that he just doesn't serve a satisfying dramatic narrative purpose because that's not the point of him. Magic picaroons make up a small percentage of any actual society, and religion, especially but not only in Egypt, is concerned with a lot of things that player characters don't really focus on, like the fate of the soul. The idea of protecting the deceased in the afterlife would be hugely more important to ancient Egyptian people who, you know, if there's one thing they have in common, it's that at some point they're all going to die and presumably go into the afterlife, than any of this stuff about battling evil. But even then, I don't see that Sekar is particularly an evil battling figure. And it's not like Jim Ward looked at the mythology and went, you know, there's a role for this that's left vacant because other deities fit the bill much more obviously. It seems like a bit of an odd choice to me. Here is a mention of Sokar from the Book of the Dead, which identifies him with Osiris. So this is what's labeled here as an introductory hymn to Osiris. And as you can see, it's almost totally about Osiris. Worship of Osiris Wen Nefer, the great god who dwells in the Thinite Nome. King of Eternity, Lord of Everlasting, who passes millions of years in his lifetime, firstborn son of Nut, begotten of Geb, heir, Lord of the Wereret crown, whose white crown is tall, sovereign of gods and men, he has taken the crook and the flail and the office of his forefathers. May your heart, which is in the desert land, be glad, for your son Horus is firm on your throne, while you have appeared as Lord of Busiris, as the ruler who is in Abydos. The two lands flourish in vindication because of you, in the presence of the Lord of all. All that exists is ushered into him, in his name of Face to whom men are ushered. The two lands are marshaled for him as leader, in this his name of Sokar. His might is far-reaching, one greatly feared, in this his name of Osiris. He passes over the length of eternity, in his name of Wen-Nefer. So here we see that Sokar is one of the aspects of Osiris, and those different aspects are concerned with different ways in which Osiris is, you know, a king of gods, a god of the underworld, a protective deity, and so on. But this seems a far cry from the earlier role of Sokar as, you know, whether he's some kind of sky god or a god of crafts or what have you. Sokar would be a great example of the ways in which Egyptian deities can change from time to time and place to place, except that next time we're going to be talking about Set, and I feel like he's maybe the example of that. So, you know, other than pointing out that this is quite common, I don't know that this is the deity that I would use to do it. I will say, I have read it suggested, and I don't know how accurate this is, that Sokar begins as a patron of craftsmen. He specifically is a patron of the people who make the various, like, artifacts and structures that are associated with funerary rituals. From there, he becomes a patron of funerary rites, and thus a deity associated with protection of the underworld, with openings to the underworld. His name may, no one's quite sure what it means, but it may have something to do with speaking or with cleaning the mouth. So that may indicate a funerary rite again. Ta is also involved in a rite called the opening of the mouth. There's so much depth. At the risk of sounding cynical, I would say that Sokar may have more depth than we really need him to. By which I mean that sometimes you want to have a level of complexity in a religion to give it a touch of verisimilitude. I'm going to use a Glorianthan example here because that's what I always do, but if you look at The Worship of Orlanth. If Glorantha were another RPG, you would assume that the bluff, boisterous Orlanth who appears in many of the myths of Orlanth the Adventurer would be reflected in the traditional rites of Orlanthi worship, that there would be lots of, like, combat ceremonies or other, you know, this is the boisterous, rowdy storm god, therefore his ceremonies are boisterous, rowdy affairs. And sometimes they are, you know, a bunch of Orlanthi warriors getting drunk and getting in brawls and dancing and playing music, sure. But also, there's all this weird stuff about the Second Sun and the Star Seven Song and, like, these weird initiatory secrets. Because actual religions are extremely complex and weird. And sometimes, if you want to do that, you should just, like, skim the top off of a real religion, right? One of the things that Deities and Demigods does that I find very frustrating is that it takes real deities and it sort of tries to hammer them into the shape of a D&D pantheon instead of doing what it ought to do, which is look at what real pantheons look like and attempt to infer the shape of a D&D pantheon from them. Because, like, the priesthood of Sokar being bafflingly complex and yet also, like, politically powerful and having been around for 1,000 years actually makes for a really good feature of your setting, and it doesn't even have to be a joke. But they can just want things for religious reasons that are much more complex than, like, oh, we worship the fire god, Flamey McBurnerson, and he likes to set things on fire. You don't have to model the underlying bones of this very complex religion. Just take some of its superficial features, which can include things that sometimes don't make any sense. But the problem with that specifically is that the more work you do on Sokar from a gaming perspective, the more you see that he's kind of a long run for a short slide. If he's just the evil battling god of light, then he may be exciting, but he's not complex and he's not really Sekar or Sokar, so you don't have to bother with him. But on the other hand, if he is this complex funerary protector, like, we already have. I mean, how many protective funerary deities do you need? Because we have minimum 3 already in the forms of Anubis, Osiris, and Ta'a. So, although I think that the complexity of Sekar is illustrative of the challenges and opportunities of dealing with ancient Egyptian religion, I don't know that he necessarily is a very good example of those opportunities. But in our next episode, we're going to run into a deity who absolutely represents those opportunities as we look at the bad guy of the pantheon. Or is he? Set. So I hope that you'll all join me then for Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.